This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Eva Romero. Today, I'm with Carlos Gutierrez, co-programmer of Cinema Tucson and co-founding director of Cinema Tropical. Welcome, Carlos.
Thank you so much, Eva, for the invitation.
Carlos, could you tell us about Cinema Tucson and maybe starting with the next screening that's coming right up on October 17 at the Fox Theater?
Cinema Tucson is a new initiative, I would say new and exciting initiative. We're presenting Mexican films every month at the wonderful historic Fox Tucson Theater. And we launched this series with experience of having produced the festival Tucson Cine Mexico over, almost 15, 16 years. So we changed the format, and instead of a festival format, now we have monthly screenings as a way to get to audiences in a more sort of constant way. We launched our first screening just a few weeks ago in September, and now our second screening is a new digital restoration of the wonderful and campy 1968 Mexican movie, The Batwoman, kind of Mexico's take on the Batmania.
Cinema Tucson is a new iteration of Tucson Cine Mexico, building on that history. That has been a Mexican film festival held in Tucson for a long time now. Can you tell us a little bit about that through thread, that trajectory?
And I guess also my connection, you know, even though I'm based in New York, and I feel a Tucsonian. You know, Vicky Westover, who used to run the Hanson Film Institute at the University of Arizona, she started this festival in 2004 or 5, if I'm not wrong, and she invited me as a guest programmer. I believe it was for the second edition. And since then, I started going to Tucson every year. I'm helping select the films. And we created such a great community of people, a great committee that organized and produced the events. And with experience of so many years, and after the pandemic, we decided kind of to change the format a bit as a way to create more sort of constant presence of Mexican cinema in Tucson. And we were very fortunate to partner with the Fox Theater, which is a wonderful, wonderful, amazing venue.
Carlos, as a co-programmer for this festival, and you know, I know that you're involved in a lot of different film programs and film initiatives. What do you look for in a film nowadays?
I mean, I guess the most important thing is to find the relevance of each film and seeing in what context you can bring out that relevance. I think a lot of programmers, they only program by taste, films they liked or don't like. In my case, I think taste is pretty much irrelevant. It's more about finding what is relevant of a film. And there's different types of relevance. It can be artistic, can be political, can be social, cultural. I don't know. There's different ways that a film can be relevant and can be meaningful for an audience. So it's basically combining those, finding that relevance and how to connect that relevance with a specific audience. I think that's what's at the core of film programming.
Carlos, I spoke to your co-programmer, Vicky Westover, when this series was Tucson Cine Mexico. And at that time, we talked about Mexican cinema's watershed moment with Amores Perros. Where would you say Mexican cinema is now?
I mean, I guess it's important on one hand to mention that Mexican cinema has had a very long and powerful history. It's had a lot of ups and downs because of the political history of the country and the political and the economic history of the country. In that sense, kind of the past 20 years, and Amores Perros basically was the one that kind of heralded this new moment. Since then, there's been an amazing moment in Mexican cinema for over two decades now. The country has created a very interesting modes of production that has enabled filmmakers a big generation of filmmakers to basically claim a filmography, to make a film career. And also the country broke all-time records. 2019, the country produced over 200 films, which was an all-time record, even more so in what was known as the golden era of Mexican cinema of the 1940s. So I do think we're living in a second golden era of sorts. Although right now, with the pandemic and with some political changes, unfortunately, there's funding and the structure for funding has been dismantled. So I'm afraid that's going to impact production of cinema in the next few years. But at least till now, I think Mexican cinema is still strong and one of the most interesting cinemas in the world right now.
I have heard some complaints, or sometimes in the form of a complaint, sometimes in the form of an observation, that the cartel is very present as subject matter in Mexican cinema. And it almost seems obligatory. And to that I say, well, I think that's just really a sign of the times. What do you think about that, Carlos?
Yes and no. I would say no. I think more of a sign of Mexican cinema right now is diversity. Mexican cinema is very diverse. So there's a lot of topics and issues. Having said that, the most of the film that gets commercialized, particularly to the US, deals with narco. And that has to do also with fascination with American audiences with narco narratives. You know, the success of the narco series, and it's been going for a while. So I think it plays more testament to kind of the fascination of that subject matter in global narratives. But Mexican cinema is much more than that. At the same time, of course, there's filmmakers that have tackled the subjects, which, of course, permeates pretty much every aspect of Mexican society these days. And there's great and masterful films that I think are you know, very important to understand. I'm going to break the news here. We just confirmed our film for November, which is Bright Years for the Stalin, Noche de Fuego, the debut fiction film by wonderful director Tatiana Hueso. We're going to screen that film in November. And actually, that film also kind of tackles what's going on in the country, but from a different perspective that we've seen.
Well, I'm really excited to hear that because I'm a huge fan of Tatiana Hueso's work. So that's going to be amazing. You were the co-founder of Cinema Tropical so many years ago. What is it, the 20th anniversary now?
Exactly. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary.
Tell us a little bit about Cinema Tropical and how you've stuck it out for 20 years.
I guess that's a tricky answer. Well, because I don't even know how we've been able to exist, because it's been very challenging. On one hand, it's been very challenging, you know, because cinema has gone, the structures of cinema have gone through major transformations in these two decades. Cinema Tropical is a non-for-profit organization. Our mission is to promote films from Latin America and the U.S. Latinx filmmaking community. We work in different capacities. I think what's really interesting about the organization is that we create a very fluid and flexible organization. I think one of the problems of the film structure is that it's very fragmented by interest, you know, distributors, sales agents, publicists, programmers, and that we forget about the forest. So each, you know, we come as film professionals with our just, we come for the tree and we forget about the forest. So in that sense, Cinema Tropical, it's a much more open organization. So we're detecting opportunities for the films all the time. And we don't have an agenda more than just finding the best opportunities for the films to screen in the US and to find their audiences. So that gave us a lot of flexibility to act. And probably that's been one of the reasons why we've survived these 20 years, that we created a very fluid and organic organization that, you know, for us at the center of the equation, it's the filmmakers and the audience. It's the day to day that we've been able to continue doing that, despite that, as I was saying, you know, the film structure has been collapsing. And more so, I mean, and after the pandemic, now we can see clearly kind of the aftermath and the challenges, and the challenges are pretty big.
Carlos, you live in New York City. We're so honored to have you as part of our film scene here through Cinema Tucson. You keep investing in this community. What does it feel like to be you and have this juxtaposition of two really different scenes, New York City's scene and Tucson's scene, and all the other film scenes that you come in contact with in your regular work?
Sure. I do think that Tucson is a very, very special place in this country and to some audiences as well. For me personally, it's a great balance between New York and Tucson. I think they're very different, and I'll explain why in a moment. I think for me it was the opposite. I'm really honored that Tucson adopted me. You know, what I was saying, the experience of Tucson in Mexico and this community that we created. I feel really proud to be part of it, and that's basically, I think, the core of all of our work in Tucson. So basically, that's what keeps me coming back and keep this wonderful community of people and professionals and audience. And I have to, and in regards to the audience, it's been very interesting because here in New York, I think people take for granted access to cultural and arts. So in that sense, of course, it's great having all this access to cultural and arts, but at the same time, I think creates a kind of a different relationship. We take it for granted. Where in Tucson, people are genuinely very open, and very appreciative when they have the opportunity to watch these films that are not necessarily very accessible. And also I think the level of discussion actually sometimes it's even more deeper in Tucson than even in New York. I think people come from a different, in a more intuitive way to the films, which is sometimes more enriching than coming from the intellect and from the discourse. And that's been also very inspiring in terms of the relationship with the films in Tucson.
Tucson is actually going through an interesting media moment right now because a few blocks away from where I'm standing, they are giving the liquor store in Menlo Park a 70s makeover for this HBO series that J.J. Abrams is producing. There's excitement about the economic boost this could bring. But there's also some trepidation. Not everybody wants to have people coming to our neighborhood throwing pizza on the roof for years to come. And that's an allusion to Breaking Bad and what that did to Albuquerque mm-hmm. as a series, right? What does a community do? How do you strike a balance, I suppose? Really, this is a theoretical question, between finding a place on the map as a film spot or a production spot mm-hmm. and not getting overwhelmed with it.
I think it's really hard. I'm a big believer of the micro. There's a big sense. And also, with the story of Cinema Tropical, it seems like this system that we live in, the idea of success is growing bigger, generating more income. And I think in that sense, Cinema Tropical is a good challenge to that. It's not the growth that is the most important. I think it's more the dedication, the constants, and I think that's basically the strength of Cinema Tropical, the fact that we've been able to do this work, accompanying all these filmmakers and building audiences for 20 years. That's really our strength, more than more than just growing big, and because that's the risk. I've seen so many colleagues, so many distribution companies, and also similar organizations that started growing, but then they lost their compass, either and they were bought by an organization or they're just gone. So it's a tough balance. But I think it's not losing the sense of what you are. I'm fighting for it, and for me it's also kind of a challenge of existence. In that sense, I kind of jokingly say, I'm jokingly but very serious, that Cinema Tropical is an anomaly to the system. Because everything is, it's interesting. Everything, and that's a conversation I also have all the time with filmmakers. Everything is in place for us to fail. So we need to generate ways that a bad decision don't kill your career. So it's kind of creating a safe space where you can still experiment, and that any decision won't kill the organization or kill the career. So in that sense, for us, what's work is keeping kind of the budgets small, but grow rather, or have a bigger visibility in terms of the impact campaigns, but at the same time, keeping our core small and focused.
And it's interesting too, because we got onto this from the comparison between Phoenix and Tucson, Phoenix being a city that has everything in Phoenix is built on exponential growth, mm-hmm. right? That's really been the model for a long time. And, when I talk to people about the art scene in Tucson, especially people who come from larger markets, often, the comment is, we just don't have the arts here that we have in other places. It's kind of barren in comparison. And, you know, my response to that is just kind of like, so what? Why would we measure the quality of our art scene based on number of artists or number of dollars? We're not massive. We're not a large market. And since when is that an important meter when it comes to art, right? So I think sometimes we get capitalist discourses conflated with cultural discourses.
I think Tucson's art scene is actually very thriving. I think it has a pretty amazing art scene, you know, for the city size, and you know, you can compare it to many other cities. And I think Tucson is really a hub for the arts. Perhaps it's not flashy, but that's also I also think that's part of the interesting part, that it's very unassuming. And I can tell that coming from New York, that everything is, you know, like so self-centered and very, you know, it's very flashy. It's a good respite for, in that sense, too. So it's again, because there's a lot of our riches in its arts and culture, but without the pretensions of a city like New York.
Tell us about your artistic route.
I guess in my personal biography, when I was a kid, you know, really young, preteen, I used to love theater a lot. That was my kind of, my passion. But then when I was a teenager, I discovered cinema. I started watching films a lot, you know, 3 films a day when I was like 16, 17 years old. And so basically I kind of sadly dumped theater for film. And when it was time to choose what to study in college, I kind of had it clear. I knew I wanted to make a career, a professional career out of film, but I had it very clear that I didn't want to make films. I wanted to make a career out of watching films, you know, and that's been clear. I mean, I up until now, I don't want to make films, you know, and more so now after working with so many amazing filmmakers, I don't have anything to say. I don't think anything to bring to the table as a filmmaker. I was lucky. I thought film criticism, you know, becoming a film critic would be the only way to do that, to work in film, not having to make films. I studied communication in Mexico, specialized in journalism. I was born and raised in Mexico City. And then I graduated and I applied for a master's in cinema studies at New York University in cinema studies, but not really knowing what cinema studies was all about, because my background in Mexico, you know, cinema and film criticism was very formalistic. I didn't really have contact with cultural studies and with other kind of theoretical frames. And here in New York, that's where kind of I was open to all these new different theories, but also kind of opened up kind of a kind of worms in the sense of understanding that there were a lot of other things that I could do in film besides film production, you know, distribution, programming. And so it was a very enriching process. And actually, the idea of Cinema Tropical started in my master's. That's where I met Monica Wagenberg. She was born and raised in Colombia. And she and I, we became good friends, and we started thinking about ways to bring more films from Latin America it was 1997. And that's where kind of the seed for Cinema Tropical started. And officially in 2001 is when we officially launched our first screening. Again, as I was saying, it's been challenging, but also it's been a great honor to be able to accompany all these great films and filmmakers these 2 decades. I mean, many of the filmmakers that we have supported and we have programmed, you know, some of them are like really the who's who of world cinema right now. So I'm really felt an honored and privileged that through Cinema Tropical we've been able to accompany all these wonderful filmmakers. And also and the Museum of Modern Art, the MoMA, actually, we just finalized a tribute series to Cinema Tropical as part of our 20th anniversary, where we screened 20 films in their virtual cinema.
What an awesome service, really, that you've provided in terms of the promotion of Latin American film in the United States. So much to watch.
I'm the first one that that I'm overwhelmed by the number of films to watch. It's so many. Again, in 2019, Latin America produced over 1,200 films. So imagine, and that was only 1 year. So, and the ratio of quality and quantity is pretty high in Latin America compared to other parts of the world.
How do you think COVID has affected film watching?
It affected completely. Of course, the pandemic affected us all in different ways and made us rethink how we go about things and, you know, rethink everything. In my case, and the relationship to cinema in particular, kind of, for me, was very interesting in the sense that just reaffirmed what I kind of already knew for a long time, that cinema, it's a performing art. And in that sense, it's very similar to going to a concert, going to the opera, going to the theater. It's very related to that. So in that sense, cinema was very hurt the same way as all these other performing arts. We were able to navigate because of technology through streaming. So for this past year and a half, cinema was not a performing art, was just a visual art, as it's always been. But I do think that that's going to be the difference. And that's the potency of cinema. The fact that you can screen whatever content, and I'll just literally that word, whatever content that you get to screen in a public setting live with other people, that becomes cinema. More than the format itself, more than the language itself, I think it's experience of watching the moving image in person with a group of people. So in that sense, I think cinema is also very tied to kind of the religious aspect, you know, going to the temple, going to church, as a way to connect with something bigger than life. So I do think, at least for me, and hopefully it will be now that we're coming out of the pandemic, that the micro cinemas will see a renaissance of the micro cinema with that need to connect. And that's going to separate the experience of watching a film online versus in person. And there's something else, if I can add, about the relevance of cinema. We're so bombarded these days by social media, by our phones. You know, we're just being bombarded all day by information. So the fact that you can save an hour and a half, 2 hours of your day and focus on something, I think that act itself also gets new meaning in these current times. Also because, you know, the narratives are completely Manichaean, black and white, and we're not really thinking about the gray areas of our everyday life, our complexity, everything is, again, just simple binaries, silly binaries almost. And so going to the cinema allows for you to go deeper into any subject. So I think that the cinema experience gets another layer of importance, almost political importance in that sense.
I find it's almost harder for me to watch good cinema because I don't know where to start. I feel like I'm getting bombarded by messages about even what to watch all the time. Mm-hmm. And I end up just not watching any of it. But for anyone who's interested in going into Latin American film, a great place to start is with Cinema Tropical's channels on social, for example, and just check out some of the films that are mentioned because they're all quality. And just having that kind of curation that's done in a way that really allows you to cut through the noise and find that super good quality content.
Thanks, Eva. And I guess one we've done two polls with fellow programmers and film professionals to select the best Latin American films of the decade, of the aughts and the teens. And those lists are in our website. And I think that's, you know, for anyone who hasn't been exposed to Latin American cinema, it's a good way to enter. Each list has a big list of films, and that's, I think, a good way to enter the wonderful world of Latin American cinema. I like talking about Latin American cinemas because, again, from what I was saying earlier, the diversity, it's one of the most important aspects of what's going on. So, you know, in some case of with American cinema, you can't put everything in the same. It's so vast and so diverse that you can't really categorize American cinema rapidly. The same case with Latin America. It's so diverse and so diverse by country, by region, by topics that it's hard to just put everything in one basket. You know, we have to approach it from the diversity as well. You know, cinemas has always been a sort of a transnational endeavor, you know, since the French, well, I guess that's a larger topic, but since the French went to all over the world, you know, screening films, the Lumière in Boyer, screening films and at the same time using the same camera to project, but also to shoot. And these days also, particularly, you know, there's a lot of mixing in the sense that there's a lot of Latin American films living in other parts of the world, in the U.S. and in Europe, in Asia, making non Latin American films. There's also Latin American, you know, also Latin American films making big Hollywood films. Of course, everybody knows them. And at the same time, there's also people, non-Latin American people, living in Latin America, making Latin American films. It's a very interesting landscape that enriches from all these different perspectives, from the inside, the outside, as well, not only national, but also within the countries. You know, we've seen, thankfully, more sort of a big influence of other filmmakers that hadn't had access necessarily to filmmaking, you know, more indigenous filmmakers, people from other marginalized communities. So it's been a very enriching years for Latin America.
Carlos, is there anything else you'd like to add before we close?
I guess just invite the audience to Cinema Tucson and to join us as part of this monthly series of films. We promise to bring very exciting titles. And actually, and it's important to mention that we're trying to mix some recent films, like that's the case of Prejudice of a Stolen, which just premiered in July at the Cannes Film Festival, and it's going to go to Netflix soon. And we're combining also with vintage films and, you know, some classic films as well, with some popular cinema from the 60s and the 70s. So it's kind of also to give a broader sense of what Mexican cinema is.
Thank you so much, Carlos, for being with us today.
Thank you for the space. I love chatting with you.
This has been Artist Stories with Eva Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. Support for Artist Stories is provided by Benjamin Supply, presenting a full spectrum of hardware and plumbing fixtures for kitchen and bath, and their gallery Tucson, offering national and local art in both the Tucson Warehouse and Transfer buildings on 6th Street and 7th Avenue. With products available at will call, they're currently open by phone at 777-7000 and at benjaminsupply.com or gallerytucson.com.